Welcome to our show, and thank you so much, Professor Anita Weiss, for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, looking at the situation in Pakistan, how would you evaluate the relief work done by the government? There has been a lot of complaints from the people. They're being very angry. We've seen them on TV, and they're blaming the government for not caring, not moving fast enough. How would you assess the situation? The government, on the other hand, says we were not prepared. This is a tragedy far greater than our means.
Well, it's not usual for me to agree with governments, okay? Let's start with that. But I have to say that I think that the government of Pakistan, is not prepared to deal with a catastrophe, especially at this scale. On the one hand, what the government did is they tried to figure out immediately, how do we respond to this? And I think to their credit, they made efforts at least to try to contact countries for aid. I know almost immediately the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank pledged substantial development assistance. I think to their credit, at least, they tried to put, the well-structured part of the government, that is the diplomatic part, immediately went to work. For example, the embassy in Washington, D.C. immediately sent out information on how people could contribute to helping this effort. But we have to remember that Pakistan is a relatively weak state, and they just don't have the infrastructure in place to address a catastrophe of this magnitude. I mean, compare it with what happened in New Orleans in the United States. Here you have a strong state that has an infrastructure, and the United States somewhat bungled it too. So, I mean, the worst hit areas in Azad Kashmir and the northern parts of the Northwest Frontier Province, roads have been washed away.
Well, of course, I mean, we've seen the magnitude of the tragedy and the destruction, but isn't this endemic of developing countries, and you have studied and extensively the economy of Pakistan, the socio-economy of Pakistan. Can we fairly say that not enough resources are being directed to the infrastructure? I mean, they could develop a nuclear bomb, but they don't have roads to reach those villages. Is this a valid argument?
Yes, I agree with you, except to the last point. I think there were roads, but those roads, by and large, were washed out, in the earthquake. I mean, there was, mudslides and the like. I mean, I have long criticized what the nuclear program, the nuclear weapons program in Pakistan, precisely on the grounds that you just mentioned, that Pakistan needs to invest in its people, it needs to invest in human resources, improve schools, improve infrastructure. There is the other side in Pakistan that says first we have to build up our economic sector so that we can fund all these other things. That being said, I think the state was just, the bottom line is the state was ill-prepared. There was no way the state in Pakistan, I should say, could address a catastrophe of this magnitude on its own.
Now, what we've seen is that NGOs have stepped up their efforts and went to or tried to rescue people. Can you evaluate those efforts, please?
Sure. As best as I can, as much as I've been in contact with people and NGOs from Pakistan in this time, remember, I'm speaking from Eugene, Oregon. Remember, there's two different types of what we generically call NGOs. There's international NGOs and, grassroots, on-the-ground non-governmental organizations. Let me talk about the latter category first, because I have been so impressed by just the mobilization of people from various NGOs to come together and really focus on this, on what they're calling disaster management. For example, the Sustainable Development Policy Institute, not quite an NGO. I mean, it's a think tank that was established in Islamabad by Tariq Banuri, The Economist, made a little over a decade ago. And what they've done is they have facilitated the coming together of something called the Joint Action Committee. And the Joint Action Committee is made up of NGOs such as Sungi, which has a presence in Aptabad and areas north of it, which is very, very close to the epicenter of the earthquake. Other NGOs involved in this are the Network for Consumer Rights, Putin Development Organization, Rosen, ActionAid, and the Audit Foundation. Of course, ActionAid has international ties as well, but it really has a very vibrant on-the-ground presence in Pakistan made up of local Pakistanis. So one thing that SCPI has done is it's been able to bring together people from all these places who already have people in place in areas that have been badly affected by the earthquake. And it's these NGOs that are really mobilizing and doing a lot. There's a number of international organizations as well. Save the Children, I've heard, is doing very good work. Doctors Without Borders has immediately rushed to many of these sites. But frankly, a lot of these sites, they're in the high Himalayas, the mountains. They're very inaccessible. And I fear that, you know, the reports that we're hearing now of 100,000 dead, that's probably where the final figure will be, and certainly not less than that.
Which brings to my mind this question, why are those villages on such high mountains? I mean, those seem to be very isolated areas with little economic development, and yet we see that there are entire villages there. Can you shed some light on this?
Yes, I mean there are entire villages there, and they have been there since people can remember. I mean, the thing is, if you look at what has happened in those small villages, houses have, if you have a mud house, the house fell apart, and now you can rebuild that mud house. The worst catastrophes apparently happened at more formal structures, such as schools. It's the schools that fell. These are relatively new types of buildings for that area. So, and this is an area that, because of the what I've read, and your audience has probably read this too, because of the young age of the Himalayan, mountain chain, this is an area that's really prone to earthquakes. So there's probably always been a lot of earthquakes in this area. But people, when they were living in a more traditional lifestyle, they weren't dependent on roads, they were extremely isolated to begin with, they were able to ride out such types of catastrophes. But perhaps now also it's the crisis of rising expectations. You expect the state to be able to intervene and do something for you, whereas in the past it was just the tribal Maluk who tried to, take care of problems as they came up.
Now, what about the critics that say there are some Islamic groups that have stepped in to offer relief, but this relief comes like with strings attached, or that they're fearing that they will propagate a very radical type of Islam, or that they will impose their influence on certain areas?
There's a great deal of seriousness to that comment, and a great deal of truth associated with it, but let me try to explain it a little bit. I don't think that because some of these Islamist groups are stepping in for earthquake assistance, that they will suddenly have a new kind of influence in entire areas. I think that, yes, they will certainly have individuals who will join them now.
They will gain credit for their efforts.
Yes. But what I'm saying is they are already active in areas where they already enjoyed a great deal of popularity. So what I'm saying is it's not suddenly that they're stepping into an area where they have no base. It's interesting to contrast the Islamist groups that you've just mentioned with the more progressive NGOs such as Sungi and Patan. All of them have people on the ground. It's just, what is your ultimate goal and the ultimate aim? there is a great deal of popular support for Islamist organizations in the northern parts of the Northwest Frontier Province. It's an area that's very traditional. It's an area that has chosen for a long time to be cut off from, you know, from the outside world and even from the state in Pakistan. So I don't think that, that's going to have such reverberations. I will say that here's an opportunity for the global community to show a great deal of support to Pakistan, which in turn will convince Pakistanis that the rest of the world indeed does care about their plight. One of the problems is that very often Pakistanis, or especially in these areas where the Islamist influence is greater, very often people have said that, you know, the West doesn't care about the Muslim world. I mean, look at what has happened in Afghanistan, and they'll go on and on with, you know, with some very serious critiques of interactions between the West and the Muslim world and Pakistan and Afghanistan. And I think here's an opportunity for Western countries. I know that Canada immediately came to Pakistan's assistance with some formidable offers of aid. I think that it's unfortunate that the administration in the United States, their first step was a serious faux pas. I mean, when the New Orleans catastrophe happened, it was the government of Afghanistan that offered the United States $100,000 to help relieve, you know, as aid, really, for relief of what was happening in the New Orleans area. So when this catastrophic earthquake hit Pakistan, the United States offered Pakistan, a longtime ally, $100,000 in aid. Now, some of the people in the Bush administration and Bush's cronies, they drive cars that are worth more than $100,000. That being said, I think it was 6 hours later, the United States did an about-face and offered Pakistan a much more substantial package of aid. But that first mistake really caused a lot of negative PR in Pakistan towards the United States.
Professor Anita Weiss, would you like to comment on what happened now between India and Pakistan? This was cooperation, really admirable cooperation that we've seen for the first time.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, India and Pakistan for the past couple of years have been trying to move towards some type of rapprochement over Kashmir. It's a very difficult situation to work out because India doesn't want to give up Kashmir for their own nationalist reasons. Pakistan certainly doesn't want to give up their part of Kashmir for nationalist reasons. And how do you resolve a conflict like this? They've been trying to build better relations between India and Pakistan. They've been inviting journalists from each country to go to the other country. They've had other types of visits to promote peace between the two countries. But what's happening now is actually rapprochement on the ground, so to speak.
Spontaneous.
Pardon?
Spontaneous.
Yes. I mean, it's like they're coming to each other's aid. And at first, India offered aid just to Azad Kashmir. And the initial reaction of the government of Pakistan was, well, I don't know if we can let the Indians into, you know, this area, which is really the war zone. The line of control area was very badly hit in this earthquake, or just west of the line of control, actually. And then I think people reconsidered that and realized that here was an opportunity that could not be passed up to promote, you know, substantial peace in the area. This is something people will remember always. Who came to their aid when they really needed it? And I think that's important, and I just, you know, I think that for India and Pakistan to try to finally reach some kind of a workable agreement, I think that that is an offshoot of what may likely emerge from this cross-border cooperation in the light of this catastrophe.
Professor Anita Weiss from the University of Oregon, thank you very much for this most interesting analysis.
You're welcome. Thank you.